They who have a care for their souls, and do not merely live in the fashions of the body, say farewell to all this. They will not walk in the ways of the blind, and when philosophy offers them purification and release from evil, they feel that they ought not resist her influence, and to her they incline, and whither she leads they follow her. The man who makes everything that leads to happiness depend upon himself, and not upon other men, has adopted the very best plan for living happily. This is the man of moderation, the man of manly character, and of wisdom. If you don't get what you want, you suffer. If you get what you don't want, you suffer. Even when you get exactly what you want, you still suffer, because you can't hold on to it forever. Your mind is your predicament. It wants to be free of change, free of pain, free of the obligations of life and death. But change is a law, and no amount of pretending will alter that reality. I desire only to know the truth, and to live as well as I can, and, to the utmost of my power, I exhort all other men to do the same. I exhort you also to take part in the great combat, which is the combat of life, and greater than every other earthly conflict. Two distinctive traits especially identify beyond a doubt a strong and dominant character. One trait is contempt for external circumstances, while one is convinced that men ought to respect, to desire, and to pursue only what is moral and right. That men should be subject to nothing, not to another man, not to some disturbing passion, not to fortune. The second trait, when your character has the disposition I outlined just now, is to perform the kinds of service that are significant and most beneficial. But they should also be services that are a severe challenge, that are filled with ordeals, and that endanger not only your life, but also the many comforts that make life attractive. Of these two traits, all the glory, magnificence, and the advantage too, let us not forget, are in the second, while the drive and discipline that make men great are in the former. For there is but one essential justice which cements society, and one law which enables this justice. This law is right reason, which is the true rule of all commandments and prohibitions. Whoever neglects this law, whether written or unwritten, is necessarily unjust and wicked. Moral excellence is concerned with pleasure and pain. Because of pleasure, we do bad things, and for fear of pain, we avoid noble ones. For this reason, we ought to be trained from youth, as Plato says, to find pleasure and pain where we ought. This is the purpose of education. Is happiness to be acquired by learning, by habit, or some other form of training? It seems to have come as a result of virtue and some process of learning, and to be among the godlike things, since its end is godlike and blessed. Man is a tame or civilized animal. Nevertheless, he requires proper instruction and a fortunate nature. And then, of all animals, he becomes the most divine and the most civilized. But if he be insufficiently or ill-educated, he is the most savage of earthly creatures. In order for a man to succeed in life, God provided him with two means, education and physical activity. Not separately, one for the soul and the other for the body, but for the two together. With these means, we can attain perfection. The inexperienced in wisdom and virtue, ever occupied with feasting and such, are carried downward, and there, as is fitting, they wander their whole life long, neither ever looking upward towards the truth above them, nor rising toward it, nor tasting pure and lasting pleasures, like cattle, always looking downward with their heads bent towards the ground and the banquet tables, they feed, fatten, and fornicate. In order to increase their possessions, they kick and butt, with horns and hooves of steel they kill each other, insatiable as they are. Six mistakes mankind keeps making century after century, believing that personal gain is made by crushing others, worrying about things that cannot be changed or corrected, insisting that a thing is impossible because we cannot accomplish it, refusing to set aside trivial preferences, neglecting development and refinement of the mind, attempting to compel others to believe and live as we do. Never discourage anyone who continually makes progress, no matter how slow. He who is only an athlete is too crude, too vulgar, too much a savage. He who is a scholar only is too soft, too effeminate. The ideal citizen is the scholar-athlete, the man of thought, and the man of action. Strange times are these in which we live, when old and young are taught falsehoods in school, and the person that dares to tell the truth is called at once a lunatic and fool. Wise men talk because they have something to say, fools because they have to say something. Imagine that the keeper of a huge, strong beast notices what makes it angry, what it desires, how it has to be approached and handled, the circumstances and the conditions under which it becomes particularly fierce or calm, what provokes its typical cries, and what tone of voice makes it gentle or wild. Once he's spent enough time in the creature's company to acquire all this information, he calls it knowledge, forms it into a systematic branch of expertise, and starts to teach it, despite total ignorance, in fact, about which of the creature's attitudes and desires is commendable or deplorable, good or bad, moral or immoral. His usage of all these terms simply conforms to the great beast's attitudes. And he describes things as good or bad according to its likes and dislikes, and can't justify his usage of the terms any further, but describes as right and good the things which are merely indispensable, since he hasn't realized and can't explain to anyone else how vast a gulf there is between necessity and goodness. It is the task of the enlightened not only to ascend to learning and to see the good, but to be willing to descend again to those prisoners and to share their troubles and their honors, whether they are worth having or not. And this they must do, even with the prospect of death. I thought to myself, I am wiser than this man. Neither of us probably knows anything that is really good, but he thinks he has knowledge when he has not, while I, having no knowledge, do not think I have. Those who are able to see beyond the shadows and lies of their culture will never be understood, let alone believed by the masses. Bodily exercise, when compulsory, does not harm the body, but knowledge which is acquired under compulsion obtains no hold on the mind. Human behavior flows from three main sources: desire, emotion, and knowledge. Evil is the vulgar lover who loves the body rather than the soul, inasmuch as he is not even stable, because he loves a thing which is in itself unstable, and therefore, when the bloom of youth, which he was desiring, is over, he takes his wings and flies away, in spite of all his words and promises, whereas the love of the noble disposition is lifelong, for it becomes one with the everlasting. The greatest wealth is to live content with little. No matter how hard you fight the darkness, every light casts a shadow. And the closer you get to the light, the darker the shadow becomes. The man who finds that in the course of his life, he has done a lot of wrong, often wakes up at night in terror, like a child with a nightmare, and his life is full of foreboding. But the man who is conscious of no wrongdoing is filled with cheerfulness and with the comfort of old age. Either we shall find what it is we are seeking, or at least we shall free ourselves from the persuasion that we know what we do not know. One of the penalties of refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors. There are three classes of men: lovers of wisdom, lovers of honor, and lovers of gain. There is in every one of us, even those who seem to be the most moderate, a type of desire that is terrible, wild, and lawless. If men learn this, it will implant forgetfulness into their souls. They will cease to exercise memory because they rely on that which is written, calling things to remembrance no longer from within themselves, but by means of external marks. What you have discovered is a recipe not for memory, but for reminder. And it is no true wisdom that you offer your disciples, but only its semblance. For by telling them of many things without teaching them, you will make them seem to know much, while for the most part they know nothing. And as men filled not with wisdom, but with the conceit of wisdom, they will be a burden to their fellows. A hero is born among 100, a wise man is found among 1,000, but an accomplished one might not be found even among 100,000 men. And so when a person meets the half that is his very own, whatever his orientation, then something wonderful happens. The two are struck from their senses by love, by a sense of belonging to one another, and by desire, and they don't want to be separated from one another, not even for a moment. In politics, we presume that everyone who knows how to get votes knows how to administer a city or state. When we are ill, we do not ask for the handsomest physician or the most eloquent one. You know that the beginning is the most important part of any work, especially in the case of a young and tender thing, for that is the time at which the character is being formed, and the desired impression is more readily taken. Shall we just carelessly allow children to hear any casual tales, which may be devised by casual persons, and to receive into their minds ideas for the most part very opposite of those which we should wish them to have when they grow up? We cannot. Anything received into the mind at that age is likely to become indelible and unalterable, and therefore it is most important that the tales which the young first hear should be models of virtuous thoughts. Only a philosopher's mind grows wings, since its memory always keeps it as close as possible to those realities by being close to which the gods are divine. Man is a prisoner who has no right to open the door of his prison and run away. A man should wait and not take his own life until God summons him. That's what education should be, I said, the art of orientation. Educators should devise the simplest and most effective methods of turning minds around. It shouldn't be the art of implanting sight in the organ, but should proceed on the understanding that the organ already has the capacity, but is improperly aligned and isn't facing the right way. When someone sees a soul disturbed and unable to see something, he won't laugh mindlessly, but he'll take into consideration whether it has come from a brighter life and is dimmed through not having yet become accustomed to the dark, or whether it has come from greater ignorance into greater light and is dazzled by the increased brilliance. Love is born into every human being. It calls back the halves of our original nature together. It tries to make one out of two and heal the wound of human nature. Do not train a child to learn by force or harshness, but direct them to it by what amuses their minds, so that you may be better able to discover with accuracy the peculiar bent of the genius of each. I will begin to speak when I have that to say which had better not be unsaid. Consider it the greatest of all virtues to restrain the tongue. I know not what treason is, if sapping and betraying the liberties of people be not treason. Some have said that it is not the business of private men to meddle with government, a bold and dishonest saying, which is fit to come from no mouth but that of a tyrant or a slave. To say that private men have nothing to do with government is to say that private men have nothing to do with their own happiness or misery, that people ought not to concern themselves whether they be naked or clothed, fed or starved, deceived or instructed, protected or destroyed. An honest man is seldom a vagrant. By liberty, I understand the power which every man has over his own actions, and his right to enjoy the fruits of his labor, art, and industry, as far as by it he hurts not the society or any members of it, by taking from any member, or by hindering him from enjoying what he himself enjoys. The fruits of a man's honest industry are the just rewards of it, ascertained to him by natural and eternal equity, as is his title to use them in the manner which he thinks fit, and thus, with the above limitations, every man is sole lord and arbiter of his own private actions and property. Consider in silence whatever anyone says. Speech both conceals and reveals the inner soul of man. In doing nothing, men learn to do evil. Speak briefly and to the point. Whoever would overthrow the liberty of a nation must begin by subduing freedom of speech. Without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech. Flee sloth, for the indolence of the soul is the decay of the body. It is remarkable that men, when they differ in what they think considerable, will be apt to differ in almost everything else. Their difference begets contradiction. Contradiction begets heat. Heat quickly rises into resentment, rage, and ill will. Thus they differ in affections as they differ in judgment. Wise men are more dependent on fools than fools on wise men. The primary virtue is, hold your tongue. Who knows how to keep quiet is close to God. All have the gift of speech, but few are possessed with wisdom. I would not be beholden to a tyrant for his acts of tyranny, for it is but usurpation in him to save, as their rightful lord, the lives of men over whom he has no title to reign. Time obliterates the fictions of opinion and confirms the decisions of nature. Few are those who wish to be endowed with virtue rather than to seem so. God's law is right reason. When perfectly understood, it is called wisdom. When applied by government in regulating human relations, it is called justice. It is not by muscle, speed, or physical dexterity that great things are achieved, but by reflection, force of character, and judgment. A mind without instruction can no more bear fruit than can a field, however fertile, without cultivation. To be content with what we possess is the greatest and most secure of riches. Do not blame Caesar. Blame the people of Rome who have so enthusiastically acclaimed and adored him, and rejoiced in their loss of freedom, and danced in his path, and given him triumphal processions. Blame the people who hail him when he speaks in the forum of the new, wonderful, good society, which shall now be Rome, interpreted to mean more money, more ease, more security, more living fatally, at the expense of the industrious. For while we are enclosed in these confinements of the body, we perform as a kind of duty the heavy task of necessity. For the soul from heaven has been cast down from its dwelling on high and sunk, as it were, into the earth. A place just the opposite to godlike nature and eternity. But I believe that the immortal gods have sown souls in human bodies so that there might exist beings to guard the world, and after contemplating the order of heaven, might imitate it by their moderation and steadfastness in life. The best armor of old age is a well-spent life preceding it, a life employed in the pursuit of useful knowledge, in honorable actions and the practice of virtue, in which he who labors to improve himself from his youth will in age reap the happiest fruits of them, not only because these never leave a man, not even in the extremest old age, but because a conscience bearing witness that our life was well spent, together with the remembrance of past good actions, yields an unspeakable comfort to the soul. It is the peculiar quality of a fool to perceive the faults of others and forget his own. What is morally wrong can never be advantageous, even when it enables you to make some gain that you believe to be to your advantage. The mere act of believing that some wrongful course of action constitutes an advantage is pernicious. Knowledge which is divorced from justice may be called cunning rather than wisdom. It is a great thing to know your vices. I am not ashamed to confess I am ignorant of what I do not know. The enemy is within the gates. It is our own luxury, our own folly, our own criminality that we have to contend. To be ignorant of what occurred before you were born is to remain always a child. For what is the worth of human life unless it is woven into the life of our ancestors by the records of history? The function of wisdom is to discriminate between good and evil. There exists a law not written down anywhere, but inborn in our hearts, a law which comes to us not by training or custom or reading, but by derivation and absorption and adoption from nature itself, a law which has come to us not from theory, but from practice, not by instruction, but by natural intuition. I refer to the law which lays it down that if our lives are endangered by plots or violence, or armed robbers or enemies, any and every method of protecting ourselves is morally right. There is, I assure you, a medical art for the soul. It is philosophy, whose aid need not be sought, as in bodily disease, from outside ourselves. We must endeavor with all our resources and all our strength to become capable of doctoring ourselves. True law is right reason in agreement with nature. It is of universal application, unchanging and everlasting. It summons to duty by its commands and averts from wrongdoing by its prohibitions. Hours and days and months and years go by, the past returns no more, and what is to be we cannot know. But whatever the time gives us in which we live, we should therefore be content. The man who backbites his absent friend, nay, who does not stand up for him when another blames him, the man who angles for bursts of laughter and for the repute of wit. Who can invent what he never saw? Who cannot keep a secret? That man is black at heart. Mark and avoid him. If we are not ashamed to think it, we should not be ashamed to say it. The mind becomes accustomed to things by the habitual sight of them, and neither wonders nor inquires about the reasons for things it sees all the time. Men decide far more problems by hate, love, lust, rage, sorrow, joy, hope, fear, illusion, or some other inward emotion, than by reality, authority, any legal standard, judicial precedent, or statute. Any man can make mistakes, but only an idiot persists in his error. Friendship improves happiness and abates misery by doubling our joys and dividing our grief. Everyone has the obligation to ponder well his own special traits of character. He must also regulate them adequately and not wonder whether someone else's traits might suit him better. The more definitely his own a man's character is, the better it fits him. Gratitude is not only the greatest of virtues, but the parent of all others. For books are more than books. They are the life, the very heart and core of ages past. The reason why men worked and died, the essence and quintessence of their lives. As for myself, I can only exhort you to look on friendship as the most valuable of all human possessions, no other being equally suited to the moral nature of man, or so applicable to every state and circumstance, whether of prosperity or adversity, in which he can possibly be placed. But at the same time, I lay it down as a fundamental axiom that true friendship can only subsist between those who are animated by the strictest principles of honor and virtue. When I say this, I would not be thought to adopt the sentiments of those speculative moralists who pretend that no man can justly be deemed virtuous who is not arrived at the state of absolute perfection, which constitutes, according to their ideas, the character of genuine wisdom. This opinion may appear true, perhaps in theory, but is altogether inapplicable to any useful purpose of society, as it supposes a degree of virtue to which no mortal was ever capable of rising. A mental stain can neither be blotted out by the passage of time, nor washed away by any waters. It would be better for me that the multitudes of men should disagree with me, rather than that I, being one, should be out of harmony with myself. In every one of us there are two ruling directing principles, whose guidance we follow wherever they may lead. The one being an innate desire of pleasure, the other an acquired judgment, which aspires after excellence. And so they grow richer and richer, and the more they think of making a fortune, the less they think of virtue. For when riches and virtue are placed together in the scales of the balance, the one always rises as the other falls. Esteemed friend, citizen of Athens, the greatest city in the world, so outstanding in both intelligence and power, Aren't you ashamed to care so much, to make all the money you can, and to advance your reputation and prestige, while for truth and wisdom and the improvement of your soul, you have no care or worry? Anyone who holds a true opinion without understanding it is like a blind man on the right road. I honor and love you, but why do you who are citizens of the great and mighty nation care so much about laying up the greatest amount of money and honor and reputation, and so little about wisdom and truth and the greatest improvement of the soul? Are you not ashamed of these? I do nothing but go about persuading you all, old and young alike, not to take thought for your persons or your properties, but and chiefly to care about the greatest improvement of the soul. I tell you that virtue is not given by money, but that from virtue comes money and every other good of man, public as well as private. This is my teaching, and if this is the doctrine which corrupts the youth, I am a mischievous person. There is only one good, knowledge, and one evil, ignorance. False words are not only evil in themselves, but they infect the soul with evil. I did not care for the things that most people care about, making money, having a comfortable home, high military or civil rank, and all other activities, political appointments, secret societies, party organizations which go on in our city. I set myself to do you, each one of you individually and in private, what I hold to be the greatest possible service. I try to persuade each one of you to concern himself less with what he has than with what he is, so as to render himself as excellent and rational as possible. Bad men live that they may eat and drink, whereas good men eat and drink that they may live. If the head and body are to be well, you must begin by curing the soul. That is the first and essential thing. And the care of the soul, my dear youth, has to be affected by the use of certain charms. And these charms are fair words. And by them temperance is implanted in the soul. And where temperance comes and stays, there health is speedily imparted, not only to the head, but to the whole body. Understanding a question is half an answer. When my sons are grown up, I would ask you, my friends, to punish them, and I would have you trouble them, as I have troubled you. If they seem to care about riches, or anything more than about virtue, or if they pretend to be something, when they are really nothing, then reprove them, as I have reproved you, for not caring about that for which they ought to care, and thinking that they are something when they are really nothing. And if you do this, I and my sons will have received justice at your hands. I cannot teach anybody anything. I can only make them think. No man has the right to be an amateur in the matter of physical training. It is a shame for a man to grow old without seeing the beauty and strength of which his body is capable. Contentment is natural wealth. Luxury is artificial poverty. I decided that it is not wisdom that enables poets to write their poetry, but a kind of instinct or inspiration, such as you find in seers and prophets who deliver all their sublime messages without knowing in the least what they mean. Men generally agree that the highest good attainable by action is happiness, and identify living well and doing well with happiness. No one is able to attain the truth adequately, while, on the other hand, no one fails entirely. But everyone says something true about the nature of all things. And while individually they contribute little or nothing to the truth, by the union of all, a considerable amount is amassed. The man who is truly good and sensible bears all fortunes, we presume, becomingly, and always does what is noblest under the circumstances. Some identify happiness with virtue, some with practical wisdom, others with a kind of philosophical wisdom, others add or exclude pleasures, and yet others include prosperity. We agree with those who identify happiness with virtue, for virtue belongs with virtuous behavior, and virtue is only known by its acts. The wise man does not expose himself needlessly to danger, since there are few things for which he cares sufficiently, but he is willing, in great crises, to give even his life, knowing that under certain conditions, it is not worthwhile to live. We should not only be grateful to those whose opinions we share, but also to those who have gone astray. For even the latter have contributed something, since they have prepared the condition for us. No happy man can become miserable, for he will never do acts that are hateful and mean. All men seek one goal, success or happiness. The only way to achieve true success is to express yourself completely in service to society. First, have a definite, clear, practical ideal, a goal, an objective. Second, have the necessary means to achieve your ends, wisdom, money, materials, and methods. Third, adjust all your means to that end. Every art and every inquiry, and similarly every action and pursuit, is thought to aim at some good. And for this reason, the good has been declared to be that at which all things aim. If there is some end in the things we do, which we desire for its own sake, clearly this must be the chief good. Knowing this will have a great influence on how we live our lives. If things are good in themselves, the good will appear as something identical in them all. But the accounts of the goodness in honor, wisdom, and pleasure are diverse. The good, therefore, is not some common element answering to one idea. We praise the reason or rational part of the soul because it exhorts aright and to the best course. But clearly there is in them, besides the reason, some other natural principle which fights with and strains against the reason. It is absurd to make external circumstances responsible and not oneself, and to make oneself responsible for noble acts and pleasant objects responsible for base ones. We punish a man for his ignorance if he is thought to be responsible for his ignorance. Everything done by reason of ignorance is involuntary. The man who has acted in ignorance has not acted voluntarily, since he did not know what he is doing. Not every wicked man is ignorant of what he ought to do, and what he ought to abstain from. By such errors, men become unjust and bad. It is the mark of an educated man to look for precision in each class of thing, insofar as its nature admits. There are three things which inspire confidence in the orator's own character. The three, namely, that induce us to believe a thing apart from any proof of it: good sense, good moral character, and good will. Even if there be one good which is universally predictable, or is capable of independent existence, it could not be attained by man. It is absurd to hold that a man ought to be ashamed of being unable to defend himself with his limbs, but not of being unable to defend himself with speech and reason. When the use of rational speech is more distinctive of a human being than the use of his limbs. And if it to be objected that one who uses such power of speech unjustly might do great harm, that is a charge which may be made in common against all good things except virtue, and above all, against the things that are most useful, as strength, health, wealth, generalship. A man can confer the greatest of benefits by a right use of these, and inflict the greatest of injuries by using them wrongly. If we consider the function of man to be a certain kind of life, and this to be an activity of the soul implying a rational principle, and the function of a good man to be the noble performance of these, and if any action is well performed when it is performed in accordance with the appropriate principle, if this is the case, human good turns out to be the activity of the soul in accordance with virtue. Politics appears to be the master of art, for it includes so many others, and its purpose is the good of man. While it is worthy to perfect one man, it is finer and more godlike to perfect a nation. There are three prominent types of life: pleasure, political, and contemplative. The mass of mankind is slavish in their tastes, preferring a life suitable to beasts. They have some ground for this view, since they are imitating many of those in high places. People of superior refinement identify happiness with honor or virtue, and generally the political life. Political science spends most of its pains on forming its citizens to be of good character and capable of noble acts. The life of money-making is one undertaken under compulsion, since wealth is not the good we are seeking and is merely useful for the sake of something else. Knowledge is not necessarily for the possession of virtues, whereas the habits which result from doing just and temperate acts counts for all. By doing just acts, the just man is produced. By doing temperate acts, the temperate man. Without acting well, no one can become good. Most people avoid good acts and take refuge in theory, and think that by becoming philosophers, they will become good. If the virtues are neither passions nor facilities, all that remains is that they should be states of character. Virtue is a state of character concerned with choice, being determined by rational principle, as determined by the moderate man of practical wisdom. The end being what we wish for, the means what we deliberate about, and we choose our actions voluntarily, the exercise of virtues is concerned with means, and therefore both virtue and vice are in our power. Death is the most terrible of all things, for it is the end, and nothing is thought to be either good or bad for the dead. All men agree that a just distribution must be according to merit in some sense. They do not all specify the same sort of merit, but Democrats identify with free men, supporters of oligarchy with wealth or noble birth, and supporters of aristocracy with excellence. When a distribution is made from the common funds of a partnership, it will be according to the same ratio which the funds were put into the business by the partners, and any violation of this kind of justice would be an injustice. People are different and unequal, and yet must somehow be equated. This is why all things that are exchanged must be comparable, and to this end, money has been introduced as an intermediate, for it measures all things. In truth, demand holds things together, and without it, there would be no exchange. There are three kinds of constitution: monarchy, aristocracy, and that based on prosperity, timocratic. The best is monarchy, the worst is timocratic. Monarchy deviates to tyranny. The king looks to his people's interest, the tyrant looks to his own. Aristocracy passes over to oligarchy by the badness of its rulers, who distribute contrary to equity. Most of the good things go to themselves, and office always to the same people, paying most regard to wealth. Thus the rulers are few, and are bad men instead of the most worthy. Timocracy passes over to democracy, since both are ruled by the majority. Of those we have wronged, and of our enemies or rivals, it is not the passionate and outspoken who we have to fear, but the quiet, dissembling, unscrupulous. Since we never know when they are upon us, we can never be sure they are at a safe distance. When people are feeling friendly and placable, they often think one sort of thing. When they are feeling angry or hostile, they think either something totally different, or the same thing with a different intensity.